Next case is Wires versus Community Memorial Hospital, Inc. Council may approach. Morning, Mr. Bartlett.
Good morning.
You may proceed.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Chris Bartling. I'm an attorney in Lincoln, Nebraska. I represent the appellants in this matter. Mr. and Mrs. Velma and Gilbert Wires. And this is a hospital negligence medical malpractice case. Ms. Wires was a patient at the defendant hospital, Community Memorial Hospital. She was having a scheduled knee replacement surgery that took place on February 27th, 2018. On February 28th, the evening after the surgery, she was recovering in a hospital bed. She's heavily sedated, and the RN that was on duty at the hospital did not turn her bed alarm on, and her side rails were down. Unfortunately, she had a fall, and the fall resulted in a fragmented break of her right femur. It was a serious injury, a life-changing injury. She required multiple surgeries following the fall and physical therapy for approximately a year and a half afterwards. She had a metal plate placed in her femur with five locking screws in the metal plate. She did a rehab for approximately 3.5 months at Old Cheney and performance.
So I'm going to cut to the chase with you because time's dwindling.
Sure.
We're here on a motion for summary judgment that was sustained by the lower court on the issue that a one-year statute of limitations was missed in the Political Subdivisions Tort Claims Act.
Yes.
And you're claiming that was an error. So why don't we talk about that?
Thank you, Your Honor. Yes, the lower court did find summary judgment in favor of Community Memorial Hospital, finding that the named defendant in this matter, Community Memorial Hospital, Inc., was not the proper defendant, and that Community Memorial Hospital District should have instead been named. The court also found that the district was a political subdivision and therefore was subject to the rules where they have to be served with the lawsuit within a year.
Well, you have to file a claim first, right?
Correct. Yeah, you have to file a claim within a year.
There's a procedure that the statute sets out that starts with you have to put the subdivision on notice that you're making a claim, and that did not happen here. Is that correct?
Unfortunately, that's correct, yes.
Mr. Barton, yes. The appellee makes several allegations or arguments in its brief, and you didn't file a reply brief, so I'm not sure what the answer to some of those things are, so I'm going to ask you what I'm going to ask you today.
Sure, thank
they,
you.
They say the issue of partnership was never raised on summary judgment. Is that true?
Well, directly it was not raised, but in essence, the argument on summary judgment was that the Community Memorial Hospital, Inc. and Community Memorial Hospital District were essentially tied at the hip. They were basically they filed joint statements as far as the finances went, as far as the income of the two entities and the expenses of the entities. They didn't delineate between either of those things. The CEO for the hospital was in the record CEO for both Community Memorial Hospital, Inc. and the Community Memorial Hospital District, and made decisions on behalf of both entities. They had joint meetings together where they discussed it. At this time, they were building a new hospital, and so they discussed all of those efforts. And really, our position, as far as the summary judgment was concerned, is that the two entities are basically interconnected to the point that they should be considered basically one and of the same, or a partnership.
So is it your position that the appellee is incorrect, that you did raise, in fact, both partnership and joint venture at the summary judgment hearing?
In essence, that's what we were, that was our argument, Your Honor.
What about the issue of equitable estoppel? Was that raised on summary judgment?
It was, in fact, that that our argument was basically that the Community Memorial Hospital did report this incident to their insurance company. They had an insurance policy with Copic Insurance, and that policy covered claims for Community Memorial Hospital. Did not anywhere in the policy state whether or not it was Community Memorial Hospital Inc. or Community Memorial Hospital District. And the insurance company went ahead and made payments associated with Ms. Ware's continuing recovery and the continuing surgery she had.
Had that issue been raised in the pleadings prior to the motion for summary judgment?
It was in the brief before the
in the pleadings. Not in the brief, in the pleadings that were filed. In your complaint, was there a claim of equitable estoppel?
In the actual complaint?
Yes.
No, there was not.
Isn't the case law from the Supreme Court that you have to raise equitable estoppel in a pleading in order for it to survive?
That would be raised in a reply. Initially, the defendant filed a motion to dismiss or for summary judgment. And at that point, when we filed the brief, we raised the issue in the brief.
Did you ever request leave to file an amended complaint prior to the motion for summary judgment being heard?
Thank you. That's a good question. I did not because the court, once it took the summary judgment under advisement and issued a ruling, found that that allowing the amendment of the complaint to include the district would be futile because of the one-year requirement for the notice.
I said, before the summary judgment was heard, had you ever asked to file an amended complaint?
I did not, no.
And the final issue that they raised in their brief is the savings clause argument that you raised in yours. Is that something that was addressed with the trial court on summary judgment?
The savings clause was not. We were addressing it on appeal. Essentially, the records for Ms. Ware's all indicated that that she was having her services performed by Community Memorial Hospital. There was no signage to indicate that this was a hospital district. And this isn't like the name Community Memorial Hospital isn't like some of the other hospital districts in Nebraska. You know, it's not like Box Butte County Hospital or like Cheyenne County Hospital. This is a hospital that's been in the Syracuse area for a long time, and the Community Memorial Hospital Inc. was actually established, filed as articles of incorporation prior to the district being in place, and did business as a nonprofit prior to the district. The ownership of the actual hospital is Community Memorial Hospital Inc. It owns the real estate, it owns the ground, it owns a majority of the contents of the hospital.
But does it conduct business as a hospital?
Our position would be yes, it does. It does have a lease agreement with the Community Memorial Hospital District.
So it's a landlord?
Well, it's not really a traditional landlord-tenant type relationship. In and of the fact that it has the finances are intertwined together, they file joint financial statements, they have joint meetings.
Were the joint meetings limited to the construction phase?
They began during the construction phase, but the testimony at the deposition for the president of Community Memorial Hospital Inc. is that the meetings continued after the construction phase to be a joint meeting. And then the lease between the parties is, yeah, it's not your traditional lease. I mean, it allows for all of the revenue, excess revenue of the hospital to be paid to Community Memorial Hospital Inc. And the testimony from the deposition of the president is that he then set up a bank account, had CDs for the hospital, and had the money sitting basically as reserve. And used it in that instance, and to pay the loan, obviously, for the hospital too. So our position would be that they're intertwined and that they're essentially a partnership, and that we had named the proper party in this matter. With that, I would, I'll reserve the last 30 seconds, Your Honor.
All right, thank you.
Thanks.
Morning, Mr. Mooney.
Good morning. May it please the court. I'm here representing Community Memorial Hospital, Inc., which is not a hospital. It is a private corporation that owns property in Syracuse, Nebraska, and it acts as a landlord to Community Memorial Hospital District. The district is the entity that is licensed by the state to operate a hospital business. The district is the entity that employs nurses and doctors who provide healthcare services. The issue in the case is this simple. Plaintiffs sued Inc. They did not sue district. They claimed medical malpractice and res ipsa loquitur against Inc., not district. In order to commit malpractice, you have to be a doctor or a hospital or a doctor or a nurse or a healthcare provider and or be an employer of one of those types of people. If I commit malpractice during this oral argument, my clients can't sue my landlord for that. They have to sue me. I'm a lawyer. I'm a licensed professional acting on behalf of my clients in this oral argument. That is essentially what the plaintiffs have claimed, is that a nurse failed to set the bed alarm. The plaintiff fell out of her bed. That is in the course and scope of providing health care services. Therefore, it is a malpractice claim, and the entity responsible for that malpractice is district, who is not a party, has never been named a party in this action, has never been served as a party to the action, and was never asked to be made a party to the action. We did a lot of briefing in the in the underlying court on the issue of district's potential liability, because I expected at some point there would be a motion for leave to amend after we disclosed all of these relevant facts that Inc. doesn't employ nurses or doctors. I expected a motion for leave to amend to add the district. So we were trying to appraise the court of the fact that they couldn't amend and add district. It would be futile because there was no claim. That motion never came. So ultimately, the issue before you all is...
But even if it had come, it would have been unsuccessful because of the one-year statute problem, right?
Absolutely. There was no timely claim filed, and therefore that claim is and will forever be dead. Certainly, the plaintiff filed their suit timely within the Hospital Medical Liability Act statute of limitations against Inc. The problem is Inc. has no duty to the plaintiffs under the Hospital Medical Liability Act because they are not a hospital. They do not employ any of the individuals who had care, custody, and control of the plaintiff's medical care. It's that simple. There is no duty here on behalf of Inc. owed to the plaintiffs.
Would there be a duty if a joint venture or a partnership existed? Hypothetically.
Hypothetically, I don't believe there would, because you run into the problem of Inc. Now, you have to remember, Inc. is the sole party. So if they sue under joint venture, Inc. would then be operating a hospital, operating as a medical provider without a license, without authority to do so. You're getting into a land that couldn't exist, because you can't have a joint venture to provide medical care between a non-licensed provider and a licensed provider. That's why this entity is set up this way, is Inc. borrowed the money, built the building, leases the building back to the people that can provide medical services under the state licensing requirements. And yes.
Is the district required to pay all excess monies to Inc. as alleged by the appellant?
There is that provision in the lease. I think it's a stretch to call it a requirement. They have to pay all of their operating expenses, which includes insurance, which includes licenses, which includes continuing medical education, salaries, etc. But I believe there is a provision in the lease over and above the base rent that provides that excess profit can go to Inc., but I don't think it's a requirement.
If we go back to the partnership and the joint venture issues. On the one hand, the plaintiff would have the duty to prove the elements for a partnership and a joint venture, correct?
Correct.
On the other hand, and I know you raised it in your brief, that it wasn't raised in the lower court, but if we are applying the standard on a review of a motion for summary judgment where we have to give every inference and benefit of the doubt to the losing party. I look at the plaintiff's annotated statement of disputed facts that were filed, and the fact that the way the defendants were pled is CMH Inc., DBA, those three other entities. Would we not have to give the benefit of the doubt to the appellate that perhaps there was inferences in the lower court that at least a type of partnership or a joint venture could be, you could gather that from what at least was before the lower court?
I struggled with that candidly as this progressed to the lower court. Does merely naming district as a DBA, even though it is not a DBA of Inc., but naming them in the caption, is that sufficient to then bring these issues of legal relationships between two separate legal entities to the fore? I don't believe it is, because you still have to serve district with a complaint and a summons within 6 months, or they're dismissed as a matter of law, and you can't do that because the Political Subdivision Tort Claim Act would bar that claim anyway. But in looking to the issue of, is this a partnership? We've addressed it in our brief. If the payment or from one partner to another partner is for rent, then it's not a partnership at law. That is specifically excluded under the Partnership Act, and that is the only entitlement that Inc. really has under the lease is payment of base rent.
So what about that excess rent clause or that excess income clause?
It's still rent. It's part of the rent. Excess income can go to them. It's part of the rent. I mean, there's a base rent, but then there's excess income that pays for MRI machines. And that, I mean, it's all part of an agreement that is a landlord-tenant relationship. So it is still not a partnership. And as to joint venture, there's absolutely no express agreement between the two to form a joint venture. They don't have mutual control. The CEO of Inc. can't go in and do surgery. He does not have the same degree of control of the operations of district as joint ventures require. Joint ventures require equal opportunity to control the business of the other business. That's not this case. Inc. doesn't have any employees except for its board of directors. Those folks can't do surgery. They can't make rounds on patients who are sitting in hospital beds. It's not a joint venture at law. And that's what we're really dealing with ultimately in the district court's decision is, she decided as a matter of law, there is no claim here against Inc. You can try and call it a partnership. You can try and call it a joint venture. Legally, they are not that. It is two separate entities, a landlord and a tenant. And you can't ignore district's business. It is a professional entity that is licensed by the state to perform jobs which other people can't do any more than lay people can't practice law for clients. You have to remember the nature of the business. They can't interchange the operations of the business, and that's your joint venture. Equitable estoppel was not pled. It was not raised. But if we hypothetically consider that argument, there is no equitable estoppel here because nothing prevented the plaintiffs from determining the nature of these two entities and their business operations. Every 4 years, the citizens of Otoe County elect the board of directors that operates district. It's a public entity. Their meetings are public by requirement of the Sunshine Laws. There is ample opportunity for the plaintiffs to figure out that it is district that operates the hospital, that employs the physicians, and that treats patients, and that was the proper party to be sued for malpractice. So, again, even considering an equitable estoppel argument, you're missing the fourth element, which is, did the plaintiffs within the 1 year have an opportunity or the ability to discover who was the proper party to be sued? And they absolutely did. Therefore, you can't apply, plus there's no misrepresentation by Inc. or district as to the nature of the relationship. The lease is public record. There's no misrepresentation, which is the very first element of equitable estoppel.
And there weren't any allegations or arguments of any misrepresentation in the lower court, is that correct?
Correct. There is a mention in plaintiff's briefing of continuing treatment. I would argue that continuing treatment wouldn't apply, first of all, because they discovered the negligence within the course of the professional relationship, and under Ginn versus Murray, there is no tolling until the plaintiff's treatment ends. But beyond that, that still doesn't save the fact we're not arguing statute of limitations. They filed within the statute of limitations period. They just filed against a party that didn't owe them a duty. So whether you look at it as res ipsa loquitur or medical malpractice, Inc., the sole named defendant, owed them no duty.
All right.
Thank you.
We had, is it 30 seconds left for rebuttal?
Yes, thank you.
I was addressing that to the bailiff.
29 seconds.
We'll call it 30. Merry Christmas.
Thank you so much. Yeah, so the lease does have the requirement that all excess profits are to be paid to Inc. In the lease, and in the deposition of the president of Inc., he indicated that he wants to make sure the hospital continues to run effectively because they're responsible for payment of the mortgage, for payment of the expenses associated with the hospital. And those are, that would indicate that there is a partnership in this matter.
Well, that'd be true of any landlord, wouldn't it? They want their tenant to be successful so they can pay their rent.
That's certainly true, but our argument would be that this isn't a regular landlord-tenant relationship. Looks like I'm out of time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks to both of you for being here.
Thank you.
We will take the case under advisement.